We are back and better than ever with the second installment of the Cornfield Chronicles. I'm going full Illinoisan on this one. Be ready. Trigger warning. This is Caffeinated Christianity. Oh, I realized two things after my last episode of the Cornfield Chronicles. Well, I realized a lot of things. Always, never mind. I realized two things that I did not do. One thing I didn't do was give my classic Caffeinated Christianity intro, which I'm going to do here in a second. I was too hype about the podcast to really remember to do that. Also, I haven't said anything about coffee in forever, which is a shame. I'm abandoning the brand. Somebody come get on me. So anyways, I digress. Welcome to the next episode of Caffeinated Christianity, recorded live from Forsyth, Illinois, where the coffee is black and the opinions are incredibly unqualified. Quick side note about my coffee escapades lately. So listen, I got this full-fledged like coffee shop thing going on now. I've got a French press. I've got an electric kettle. I got a pour over. I got a coffee grinder. I mean, I'm balling, okay? I'm absolutely balling. I look like a dang Starbucks in here. Just call me. Let's start calling this Barista Christianity. How does that sound? Did I say that right? Barista? Barista Christianity? Anyways, that's not as catchy because it's not alliterative. So let me get back on track here. What are we talking about today? Today, we are on Cornfield Chronicles Episode 2. We're going to be capturing Week 2 at a glance of my journey through the cornfields in Forsyth, Illinois. First, we must and have to do our verse of the episode. 1 Peter 4, 9 through, I'm just going to go until I stop. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. Whoever speaks as one who speaks oracles of God, whoever serves as one who serves by the strength that God supplies, in order that in everything, God may be glorified through Jesus Christ. To Him be the glory and dominion forever. Amen. I've been going through the book of 1 Peter in my personal study. I actually finished it last night. And it's a really, really good book. And one of the recurring themes is basically making the most of your moment. Making the most of your moment, using it for Christ. Making the most use of your gifts. Making the most use of suffering. Making the most use of, you know, your stage in life. And using it for Christ's glory. And I really like that verse because I'm in a situation where we've got a lot of people who are good at one or two things, and we need them to all pull their talents together so that we can get this ship going in the right direction. So that's the verse of the episode. So let's jump in to what we're talking about today. Let me give you a quick recap. Cooper, what in the world is the Cornfield Chronicles? If you missed episode 1, I encourage you to go back and listen to it. The Cornfield Chronicles is going to be basically a series of podcasts where I just go over what I'm doing in Forsyth, Illinois. God called me to serve as an interim pastor this summer at a small Baptist church in Illinois, in Forsyth, Decatur area, which is right in the dead middle of Bloomington, Champaign, and Springfield. I don't expect you to know where any of those things are, but anyways, I'm spending 2 months in Illinois serving as an interim pastor at Forsyth Baptist Church, and all of my podcasts and blogs are going to be in some form influenced by this experience. So I thought, hey, why not just make a series of podcasts on the experience? So that's what I'm doing. If you want more context, I encourage you to listen to episode 1 that I posted last week. And I'm recording this on Saturday because I got here on a Saturday. So I'm recording this every Saturday until I leave. So that's how we're rolling with this. Last week, I preached on David and Goliath. Sounds like a cop-out because everyone knows that story. And I felt like I was being a cop-out preacher in a lot of ways, but something that's really been on my mind about David and Goliath for the last probably 6 or 7 months is that it's not about us. I am not, you are not, we are not David. We cannot beat Goliath. David and Goliath is a story of the gospel about how something insurmountable was there and could not be defeated, and the regular people could not do anything about it. So an anointed one and a Messiah, which is what anointed one is in Hebrew, had to come in and save the day. I mean, it's literally the gospel. And so basically, I just preached on David and Goliath, and kind of the whole point of my sermon was, you know, we are not David. There's a Goliath in our lives. We need David to come and save the day. And that is Jesus. Jesus is David. David is Jesus. That's what the story is for, in my view. That's what I see in the story. So I preached on that. I ran a little long, and I kind of made too many side comments. I probably need to hone in my content a little bit. But I really thought the sermon, in terms of organization, was decent. My delivery wasn't great. I probably talked too fast, but, you know, really, really learned a lot. God really showed me a lot of really cool things in writing this sermon. Some stuff I'm going to carry with me for the rest of my life. Really enjoyed that sermon. If you haven't listened to the last episode, I'm currently working on the side for a landscape company here in town so that I can save up money to buy an engagement ring, because this is my only chance to work is over the summer because I play college football. And so last week, as in 2 weeks ago, we were just doing some grass cutting. This week, I did a bunch of tree work. Never done tree work in my life. Let me tell you, it kind of kicked my tail. And also, let me tell you, I got to use a wood chipper for the first time. Have you ever seen someone use a wood chipper? It's not like you think it is, like in movies and TV shows, where it kind of gradually goes in there and gets chipped. No, I'm telling you, you throw a branch in there and it disappears and vaporizes immediately. I mean, if you like slowly stick a branch into the wood chipper will yank it out of your hand. And if you're holding on too tight, it'll yank you into the wood chipper. Beats anything I've ever seen. I mean, you just toss one in there, and it's like, poof, dust on command. One of the craziest things I've ever used. One of the craziest yard lawn care equipment things I've ever used in my life. Blew my mind. So that's another thing I did this week. Here's something else I did this week, and this was freaking awesome. This is how God works. 2 weeks ago, well, in the middle of last week, as in 2 weeks, not this past week, the week before that, I got two text messages. One was from a guy named Joey Kroll. He's a local pastor, and he texted me and basically said, hey, heard what you were doing at Forsyth. We're praying for you guys. I said, you know, thanks, appreciate it. And he was like, I'd like to get together with you when I get back from the Southern Baptist Convention, which was this past week for me, for my recording this podcast. And I was like, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. So we planned that. Well, someone else texted me, some guy named Keith. Keith texts me out of the blue and says, hey, I'm a local preacher. Heard what you're doing at Forsyth. I've preached there a couple times. Wanted to know if you wanted to get dinner or something and get to know each other. And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I'll take it. I love talking to pastors. I love asking them questions. I love, you know, just interacting with people who are in ministry because there's not a lot of us. And so I want all the information I could get. And heck yeah, you know, I'm down to go do something fun during the week. I'm so busy. It's a good break from what I'm doing. So I was like, yeah. So this is a funny part of the story. Really hope Keith hears this because this was hilarious. So I text Keith on Monday and I'm like, hey, Keith, you know, does Thursday night work for you? And he's like, yeah, man, it works great. What time are you thinking? I was like, you know, probably 6:30. That's right after I get off work so I can go home and shower and then we can go. He was like, great. He was like, where do you want to go eat? And I said, I don't care, man. I'm not picky. Now, let me pause there. For those of you that live in the area I live in, Forsyth, Illinois looks just like downtown Gastonia. For those of you that don't live in the area I live in, literally from the window where I'm sitting recording this in the pastor's parsonage, I can almost see the mall, which has a Cheddar's, a Texas Roadhouse, an Olive Garden, a Red Lobster, Steak and Shake, McAllister's, Panda Express. It's got all this stuff around it. You know, all these different places. I mean, even in Decatur, there's all these other restaurants. So naturally, when you invite people to dinner, right, you're thinking something that's kind of like a sit-down, waitstaff kind of restaurant, so you have more time to kind of sit there. And so I was thinking Keith would be like, you know, man, hey, you know, do you like Texas Roadhouse? Do you like Cheddar's? You know, because, I mean, I'm pretty much down to eat anything. Well, Keith sent me this text. I said, I don't care what we eat. You pick. I'm not picky. Keith sent me a text, and it said, you know what? I haven't had McDonald's in a long time. And when I read that, I almost started to laugh. I was thinking, haha, Keith, he's a jokester. No, he was being dead serious. This man was like, yeah, let's go eat McDonald's, which is totally fine. I mean, it was great. It just was funny. I've never been invited for dinner and then asked to go to McDonald's. But hey, I don't care. I'll eat anything if it's not tied down and not mooing at me. You know what I'm saying? But anyways, that's the funny part of the story. Here's the more serious part of the story. I got to meet Keith. When Keith said he's a local preacher, he literally meant the word preacher, not pastor. Keith felt the call to ministry, or not felt, experienced the call to ministry when he was in middle school, basically to be a bivocational preacher. And so literally what he does is he fills the pulpit for churches in the area. That's what he does. When people need someone to come and preach, Keith goes and does it. And he's had the opportunity to preach at Forsyth a couple times as they're going through the revitalization process. He's from Oriana, which is a small town about 10 minutes from Forsyth. But Keith literally is, he's a special education aide. He's planning on trying to go and be a history teacher. That's what his degree is in education with a focus in social studies. But Keith literally is a local preacher. Keith fills in when people need him to fill in. Right now he's filling in for a church as an interim doing Sunday nights and Wednesday nights. And man, let me tell you, Keith's 23, so he's my older sister's age. Man, Keith is an incredible person. Just the stuff he's doing and his heart for the ministry around here is pretty incredible, because this is a depressed area and there's a lot of churches kind of going downhill around here. And Keith is young and passionate and excited and really wants to change the culture of the churches in this area. And he knows all these pastors. He's really involved in the local Baptist Association. Man, he's an incredible person. I mean, we went and ate dinner, and then we ended up going to Dunkin' Donuts to get some coffee. Man, we ended up talking the other night for like 3 hours, just about everything, about life. And we really, you know, we see things in a lot of ways. And Keith's an amazing person. He really is. And I hope he's listening to this, and I hope he hears me say that. Absolutely an incredible person, and I hope we get to do more things before I leave. Definitely poured into my life the other night. So what are my takeaways from week two? Several things. Well, really, it's about three things, and let me just jump into those now. Takeaway number one is that ministry can feel like an island a lot, but it's truthfully not. And that's a perspective I have to keep. You know, something Keith and I were talking about the other night, something I talk about to people all the time, and people who are called to ministry get it. People who are not called to ministry don't really get it sometimes. Being called to ministry just legitimately changes your life. Being a Christian changes your life first and foremost. You see things differently than the world. But being called to ministry, you even see things differently than other Christians in a lot of ways. When it comes to big decisions, even when it comes to moderate, medium, what we would consider to be, you know, minor decisions, though I may not act on this intuition, I always feel God pulling me in directions very strongly. I blow him off a lot. Do things that I think are right in a selfish manner. But being called to ministry is so potent in your life. I mean, I really feel drawn to a lot of people and a lot of things and a lot of places and a lot of ideas and a lot of beliefs and a lot of thoughts apart from myself. And I see the world even differently than Christians see it, because as Christians, we see the world as broken and in need of a Savior. And then as someone who's called to lead Christians eventually, I see not only the ministry of lost people, but I see the ministry of people who are saved that need discipling. And I've been terrible at it my whole life. I've never reflected Christ around people I'm supposed to reflect Christ around, especially not my friends in high school and people I was close to in high school. I really dropped the ball on that. And I take a lot of responsibility for who they are as people now, because I never was there for them as a Christian, as a fellow strong believer in their life. I was immature. But ministry can feel like an island a lot. Sometimes you feel like you're fighting the fight alone, because sometimes you just can't find people who feel like you feel. Me and Keith this week really kind of just reminded me that it's not a solo battle. There's just not a ton of us, but it's not a solo battle. And that's something you have to keep in perspective, because without that perspective, you know, you're going to get defeated very quickly. My second takeaway is that I'm truthfully doing something right now that 20-year-olds do not do. I didn't really think about that very much. I just really felt like this is something I needed to do this summer. I felt like this is where God was calling me. My family and I, we talked about it. We all kind of made this decision together. Everything kind of fell into place. And so everything worked out, so I just showed up. But I've had more than one person, unrelated, over the course of the last couple weeks, more so this week than last week, basically say, man, you're a little young to be doing this, aren't you? And I really kind of sat there and thought about it finally the other day, like, yeah, I am a little young to be doing this. I've got about zero experience running a church. I've got zero experience preaching. I mean, I've only preached like 6 times, counting the 2 I've preached here at Forsyth. And I mean, I really don't have any kind of skills to be doing this. I'm basically just talk a lot. That's my only skill. And I can cut grass. that kind of hit me this week. It's kind of surreal to know that I'm only 20 years old and I'm doing this. I mean, I just finished my second year of college and I'm already doing this kind of thing. I never really thought that it seemed weird and seemed kind of abnormal for a 20-year-old to be doing this, but the more people keep saying that to me, the more I realize, man, I am doing something kind of weird. And I'm not trying to flex because I'm not necessarily doing that good a job, but hey, I'm here. And I don't know, just feels kind of weird to think about it that way, that, you know, 2 years ago, I just graduated high school and now I'm serving as an interim pastor, living alone 12 hours away from home. Very interesting experience. Here's my third takeaway from this past week. Churches are falling off because of resistance to change and lack of leadership. Now, let me dive into this a little deeper to give you a little bit of background on what I'm even talking about. I do not, will not, cannot stand by the statement that the churches are going downhill because of something America did. Okay, there's no facts to support that. We were not founded by, you know, this big group of Bible study leaders. The founding fathers were not all just immaculate, you know, thoroughbred Christians. Well, America was founded on Christian principles. Kinda, not really. No one opened the Bible and said our Constitution needs to look like this. That's the point I'm making. By virtue of that, I move to this next thought. We have this resurging thought in our country among people, especially who are older, that are basically trying to blame the country on the state of the church. Churches are, I'm not going to say largely, but there are a lot of churches that are dying. They're going downhill. Why is that? There are a lot of studies from Pew Research and things you can look at. I've looked at them before for a class project I did. Here's kind of where I'm at on this whole situation. If the stats disprove me one day, please let me know. But here's where I'm at on this. Churches are dying because people who are basically 45 and younger, their attendance is not as heavy as people who are 45, 50 and older. So basically the baby boomer generation goes to church more than their kids and their grandkids do. So let's think about this logically. Let me give you a scenario. So if we get 10 years down the road and the number of people who, I don't know, play high school sports, the number of kids who play high school sports is dwindling. And we're like, well, why are they doing that? We wouldn't blame the schools, would we? There's no chance you can blame the schools. There's no chance you can blame every school in the country for the fact that kids don't play high school sports. It's got to be something else. So what would it be? Well, if a lot of kids are choosing not to play high school sports, who's probably their number one influence? Their friends and their family. And let's just go ahead and knock out friends because they're all lumped in this group of high school kids. So let's just say family. So chances are their families are the ones who are saying, hey, man, maybe you shouldn't play. Hey, maybe you shouldn't play soccer this year. Maybe you shouldn't play this. So let's transition this back into context. If church attendance is dropping and authentic Christianity in this country is dropping, are we going to blame the country or are we going to blame the people who have influence on these individuals' lives? To be completely honest, I'm going to go with answer choice B on that one. I am so tired of the mindset that it's all America's fault. Oh, well, America's going to hell in a handbasket. Or is it really? Because let me be completely honest with you, okay? I love the United States. I think we are by far, hands down, objectively the greatest country that's ever existed on the face of the planet. We are. This is the freest country you could be a part of. This is the healthiest country you could be a part of. This is the most successful country you could be a part of. And I am beyond blessed to have been born inside the borders of the United States. But the United States is ran by humans. Guess what humans do? Humans sin. What does that mean? That means that we can't hold the United States to a standard that it inherently cannot be. The government, the president, Congress, whatever is not your church. They are not Jesus. So for us to say, oh, well, church is dropping because we took prayer out of schools. Church is dropping because, you know, blah, blah, blah. Church is dropping because we never made it a priority and we didn't disciple authentic Christians. That's why church attendance is dropping. That's why church membership is dropping. Because the generation of people who went because they felt socially obligated to go is dying off. And their kids and their grandkids are the ones filling the church, and they're not because no one ever got taught the value of Christianity. No one ever got taught how to be a Christian authentically. No one was ever discipled. No one ever took the reins on this. The church, Big C as a whole, never took the reins on this and said, hey, we want to pour into your life, and we want to mentor you, and we want to show you what Christianity is about. That is a problem. Churches are falling off because the people who are left are either resistant to change or they lack authentic spiritual leadership. A takeaway from this week, after talking to Keith, after just being in the area for another week, there are a lot of small churches that are dying, and there's a lot of people who are unchurched. And that's nobody's fault but ours. I've got a 12-year-old little brother. And right now, you know, he's about as innocent as he could be as a 12-year-old. I love him to death. He's amazing. Super smart. Kind of a goober. Want to fight him sometimes, but he's awesome. But in 8 years, if Gabe starts doing a lot, his name's Gabe. If Gabe starts doing a lot of things that he's not supposed to be doing, whose fault would that be? Would that be his college's fault? Probably not. Would that be North Carolina's fault? No. Would that be Kings Mountain High School's fault? Not really. Would that be, you know, his friend Max's fault? Not necessarily. Whose fault would that be? Ultimately, it would be Gabe's because it's personal responsibility. But truthfully speaking, it would be my fault as his older brother. Gabe is my little brother. It is my job to mentor him and guide him and try as best I can to love him and push him in a direction that's going to make him not only a better person, but a better vessel for who Christ is and who Christ has called him to be. So for us to look at church membership and say it's someone else's fault, it's absolutely, unequivocally not someone else's fault. It is ours. We have got to get on the ball and bring authenticity back to God's children. I firmly believe, and I have no numbers or patterns to back this up, this is just something that I feel in my spirit, I firmly believe that the future of church membership is in authenticity. I don't think people are going to show up unless they are either saved or legitimately spiritually interested. We have this mindset that, man, if I can get people to church, they can hear the gospel. I think in 15, 20, 30, 40 years, you're going to have to share the gospel to get people to come to church. That's what I think. You can prove me wrong on that if you'd like to. I'd like to hear you say it. But I think that the future of church membership is in authenticity. And there's no other entity that can breathe that authenticity but the church itself. We've got to drop all this useless crap that we sit around and argue about and talk about and put emphasis on and blah, blah, blah. I mean, we're spending more time trying to protest stuff than we are actually pouring into believers. That is an issue. That is an issue. That is my third takeaway of the week. We have got to get on the ball. If we call ourselves a Christian, there are other people like us. And if we're not pouring into their lives, nothing's getting done. Because there's a lost world out there, but I can't save or I can't share the gospel with every single person. And I can't fix churches. The church has to fix churches. And we can. It's very possible. First, it starts with prayer. Second, it starts with surrender. Third, it starts with discipleship. If we can get those three things out of the way, we will be on the upper path to finally breathing some life back into these local churches. But if we're going to be more concerned about wanting to protest useless stuff and wanting to argue about, you know, do we sing hymns or Hillsong, and wanting to argue about, well, what kind of pants do I wear, we've got to do something about it. In closing, my Jesus moment of the week, I've been really wrestling with this. I'm preaching this week on Psalm 14, and something I've been really wrestling with is the problem of evil and suffering. I know people say, well, you know, if God's real, why is there evil and suffering? And I have a lot of answers to that. I'm not doubting the spiritual answer to that. But something that I've been really wrestling with, a teammate asked me back in the spring, you know, he's one of the teammates that likes to come and try and basically put me on the spot all the time, and he does it frequently. And I've tried to be ready for a lot of his questions. Some of them I'm ready for, some of them I'm not. But he comes up and he says, so if the Jews are God's chosen people, why do you allow the Holocaust? Like, wow, what a question. And I'm not going to answer that question for you right now because I'm really working through this. It's a very deep issue. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. But I found a video on YouTube from Rabbi Manus Friedman. And this doesn't necessarily answer the question, but he said something that has really, I mean, it kept me awake last night, to be completely honest with you. Something that's very, very powerful. And he's not even a Christian. He's a Jew. He said something to the effect of, someone had asked him the question, had written in the question, and he said, yeah, that's a great question. Let me ask a question in addition to that, he said, because I truthfully don't know. I was like, noted, me neither. He said something super powerful. He said, another question we should ask is, why would God do that to himself? And I was like, man, I mean, that made me, honestly, I got chills when he said that. You know, I just got done working through 1 Peter, and there's a lot of themes in 1 Peter about basically you're going to face suffering and consider it pure joy when you do, and consider it worthwhile when you experience suffering, because you suffered just as Christ suffered. And, you know, this is the mark of the Christian. And I thought, you know, as many times as we're going to look at God and say, why on earth would you do this to me? If we all admit that God loves us and cares about his children, the real question is, God, why would you do this to yourself? Why would you allow, you know, trials in my life knowing they're going to cause you pain, knowing that you could fix them? And the answer to that is that God has a greater purpose that we cannot and will not and shall not ever understand. But all we know is that God works things to the good of those that love him and who are called according to his purpose, Romans 8:28. So when he said that, man, that's in my bones this weekend. The question is not why would God allow. The question is why would God do it to himself, knowing that he loves us so dearly. But as the book of Hebrews tells us, that a father has to discipline his child, and God has this ultimate plan to restore creation back to perfection. And the way it gets there is a dense and complex set of things that we just can't understand in a lot of ways. But the charge against God is not, God, why would you allow this to happen to me? The charge against God is, God, why would you take this for me? Why would you do this for me? Why would you take this pain for me? Because when we hurt, he hurts. And I can assure you of that. Your CHH song of the episode is Future Me by Ruslan. That's Ruslan. I've talked about Ruslan before. I've never been a massive Ruslan fan just because I don't like his sound. I don't like his music subgenre. But he came out with an album a couple weeks ago, Indy Jones 3. And oh my gosh, the thing is fire. The dude is a phenomenal rapper. He's always been a phenomenal rapper. I'm just not crazy about all of his music. But oh my goodness, Indy Jones 3 is so good. If you're a rap fan at all, I don't care if you like Christian rap music or not. If you just like secular rap music, whatever, you got to listen to this guy. Dude's got wicked talent, and it is on full display on Indy Jones 3. I mean, the man goes in. He's just a writer. He's good. The album is just good. The song is good. The man is an animal. So with that, I say thanks for tuning in. Of course, I'll reimburse you for the brain cells. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Calf Christ. Check out calfchrist.com if you got any free time. Pretty simple. Know Christ. Reflect Christ. John 1:5. Hate sin. Love sinners. Eat some corn. And remember, and don't ever forget, that the battle is already won. Howdy.